My family and I went to a place on the coast called the Lockhart Gorge. Some of you may have seen this particular site on the coast of Australia, and it's a part of this area that's known as the Shipwreck Coast, and it's named that because over this distance of about 130 kilometres along the coast of Australia, there were nearly 700 shipwrecks along the coast, so it's named that aptly, the Shipwreck Coast. And this particular gorge that we visited was named the Lockhart Gorge because it's the name of the ship that crashed there, one of Australia's worst maritime disasters. People were travelling from a three-month journey from England to Melbourne, and of the 54 passengers and crew, only two survived. Thomas Pierce, who was one of the ship's apprentices, and Eva Carmichael, who was a passenger. Both of them were 19 years old. Now, during the shipwreck, during the ordeal, Thomas Pierce was washed to shore, so he managed to find his way to shore and built himself a makeshift shelter in the caves. And during the night, he heard someone crying out for help from the ocean. And he spent over an hour swimming at sea to save this woman, Eva, who was drowning at sea. And he brought her to shore and brought her to his the place where he had set up camp, and then spent hours climbing out of the gorge to try and raise help from the community around them. And once he was able to find some local pastoralists, shepherds in the area, if you like, they came and rescued Eva and Thomas from their ordeal. Now, he was hailed a hero for his bravery and his courage under extreme conditions. And it made me wonder, because we read about this story as we were standing at the coast, it made me wonder what was going through his mind as he's going to swim out into the ocean again. It must have been a terrifying experience, because we're talking in the 1800s at this particular time. What possessed him to swim back out to rescue this other passenger? Now, he's been thrown from the ship. Jagged rocks had torn a hole in the hull. The ship was going down, and he had made it safe to shore. And yet he chose to head back out to sea to rescue someone who was in desperate need. And this willingness to head back out into danger and uncertainty is truly a courageous and selfless act. Our reading for today is a story about a vessel at sea as well. It's a story about a vessel being tossed around in raging seas. It's a story of terrified men, the disciples, on a boat, desperately trying to reach their destination, desperately trying to go from one side of the lake to the other side. They were waiting to meet their rabbi, their teacher, Jesus, who would meet them on the other side. Jesus tells them to go and I'll meet you on the other side. And in this moment, in this story, as the waves are raging around, the disciples see a figure approaching them on the water. And they all assume it's a ghost. They're terrified. Of course, us in the know realize that it's actually Jesus, somehow miraculously walking upon the water to come to the disciples. And one disciple, setting aside fear and perhaps being a little bit curious, says, "Well, if it is you, Jesus, tell me to come to walk to you." And Jesus says, "Well, come out." And the disciple, Peter, walks upon the water. He also, Peter, experiences fear and struggle, though, and uncertainty, and then begins to sink. And we're told immediately as he begins to sink, Jesus reaches his hand out and brings him out of the waves. Peter was able to set aside the safety of the boat to make some steps towards the Messiah on the water. much like Thomas Pierce, setting aside his own fear to venture back into the sea to rescue Eva, Peter is also called by Jesus to make steps out of the safety of the boat to meet Christ on the water. So let me read to you our story from Matthew 14, 22 to 33. Immediately, Jesus made the disciples get into the boat and go on ahead to the other side while he dismissed the crowds. And after he had dismissed the crowds, he went up to the mountain by himself to pray. When evening came, he was there alone. But by this time, the boat, battered by the waves, was far from the land, for the wind was against them. And early in the morning, he came walking towards them on the lake. But when the disciples saw him walking on the lake and the water, they were terrified, saying, "It is a ghost," and they cried out in fear. But immediately Jesus spoke to them and said, "Take heart, it is I, do not be afraid." Peter answered him, "Lord, if it is you, command me to come to you on the water." And he said, "Come." So Peter got out of the boat, started walking on the water, and came towards Jesus. But when he noticed the strong wind, he became frightened. And beginning to sink, he cried out, "Lord, save me." Jesus immediately reached out his hand and caught him, saying to him, "You of little faith, why did you doubt?" When they got into the boat, the wind ceased. And those in the boat worshipped him, saying, "Truly, you are the Son of God." Very interesting experience of the disciples and of Jesus and this journey across to the other side. What's helpful for us to ponder and think about before we dive specifically into this passage is, well, what's going on before this particular story we've read today? What's happening earlier in Matthew chapter 14? Because that can help us make some sense of what is going on right now. And Matthew 14 has three distinctive sections or stories in it. It begins with the death of John the Baptist. He's executed by Herod. Jesus then feeds the 5,000, which happens just prior to our story. And then today, he then walks on water. So John the Baptist is killed. Jesus feeds the crowds. And now then Jesus walks upon the water. We can assume in some ways that, because as Mel pointed out during communion, that Jesus is fully human as well as being fully divine. And I would like to suggest that the death of John is actually a very significant thing in the life of Jesus. John was his cousin. John was the prophet who announced Christ's arrival and coming. John was the one who baptized Jesus. John was the one who led a smaller community of faith people seeking to bring about God's arriving kingdom as well. So without doubt, John's death may have given Jesus pause to wonder, what kind of death may I endure? And we're told that Jesus goes to the mountain to pray. He goes to a space where he can be alone with God, spend some time in prayer and wonder. And so when we come to this space, this story today, we're told that Jesus says to the disciples, "You go over to the other side," and then he will dismiss the crowd. And so the crowds that we're talking about are the crowds who have been fed miraculously. They've been sent back to their homes. No doubt Jesus is exhausted, both physically and mentally. He has had a traumatic time over the last number of events in his life. And so he retreats to the mountain to pray. Now, what's important here is mountains in the ancient world were very important places because the worldview believed that God lived in the sky. So on mountains were the closest place you could get to God. And throughout the biblical story, very important sacred things happen upon mountains. So it's not surprising that Jesus heads to a mountain to pray, to gather himself, to perhaps realign himself where are you calling me next, Lord? And so once his prayer time has finished, he comes down from the mountain to catch up with his disciples who are on the boat, being crashed by the waves. And then Jesus does, I think, the unimaginable. Anyone here walked on water? I've tried. It's very hard. I've tried to run really fast. It doesn't work. I tried that as a kid. So he walks on the water to the disciples. And I think it's perfectly fair. So let's not be too hard on the disciples. I think it's perfectly fair that they're a bit freaked out by this whole experience. That the wind is crashing, the waves are high. It's a high-stress situation anyway. They've been on the water all night. We're told it's early in the morning. So they're probably already frightened for their lives. And then this being comes walking towards them on the water. And so I don't think it's unfair to think it might be a ghost. I don't think that would be too low on the list of things that the disciples may have thought would be coming towards them. But Jesus responds to them in their panic and their dread. He says, "It is I. Don't be afraid." It's not a ghost, it's Jesus. And of course, Peter, probably not really convinced. You might say you're not a ghost, but if you're really Jesus, call me onto the water and let me walk there with you. And so Jesus says, "Come." And Peter walks upon the water. Amazing encounter happening on this boat. And there's a lot happening. There's a few things that are helpful for us to sit with as we begin to think, what might this passage be telling us today? And some ideas for us to sit with is the ideas of around the chaos of the water, this ghostly appearance, and how much faith is enough. This chaos of water, a ghostly appearance, and how much faith is enough. You see, in the ancient world, water was viewed with trepidation and uncertainty. A lot of fear surrounded the open ocean. We have the benefit of sonar technology and lots of research and understanding of marine life. That was not the case in the ocean in the ancient world. You can imagine what a great white shark might look like to those in the ancient world. That's a terrifying thing to see come up out of the ocean, even now, let alone in the ancient world. But it was also believed, so as we've said, that God was above in the sky and humanity reigned and lived on the earth, and under the earth was where evil dwelt. And that was the same for the ocean. A lot of fear that under the ocean were the dark places of the world, the dangerous places spiritually, treacherous places to be. So it was believed that people who were successful fishermen had done deals with the underworld to be so successful at their fishing careers. And so there was a strong theology of the chaos of the ocean, and fear surrounded the ocean. And even in the biblical story, we're told from the Genesis narrative that God calmed the chaos of the ocean, that God pushed the ocean back and created the land for humanity and creatures to live on, and that God was Lord even over the chaos of the ocean. But to the biblical mind, to the disciples, to those who lived with them, being on the sea is a threat. And it represents all the anxieties and the dark powers that threaten the goodness of the created order. And to be at sea evokes images of death, the active power that threatens the goodness of life. And our story today exemplifies some of those fears and uncertainties as the disciples are on the water with the raging seas around them, waves crashing, wind swirling, rain pelting down. The storm creates confusion. the clarity is not obvious amidst the storm. They're confused about who Jesus is. The storm has driven them so far from land, they can't see the other side. They are lost without direction. And upon these waters of chaos, imagine the fear that these men are experiencing, that they may in fact die at sea. In the midst of the storm, early in the morning, this new terror arrives. Not only is the wind pelting down, this apparition to them is arriving towards them, emerging from the chaos. And it's fascinating that the arrival of Jesus isn't initially met with welcome or relief. Instead, it just ramps up more fear. This is a ghost, and the disciples are confused about who Jesus is. And this isn't the first or last time where people are confused about who Jesus is, where they need to have some clarity. This ghost, however, brings greetings. And if you might even hear some, I know we're kind of done with Christmas, but you might hear some Christmas echoes in this greeting. The ghost says, "It is I. Don't be afraid." We hear that "don't be afraid" refrain over and over again in our Christmas narratives. When angelic hosts meet with people on the margins, they say, "Don't be afraid." Now, what's more interesting to me than the "don't be afraid" is the "it is I" moment from Jesus. What we unfortunately get lost in translation is the "it is I" is actually best translated as "I am." I am. Do not be afraid, I am. And we may remember the one who calls himself "I am" is God. To Moses in the burning bush, when Moses is trying to seek clarity about what he's going to do next, how can he talk to Pharaoh? God comes to this in the burning bush and says, "I am." So Jesus comes to the disciples and says, "I am. Do not be afraid. God is with you." Which again, Emmanuel, Christmas, God with us, even in the midst of the storms. Matthew, as a writer, is also very interested in aligning Jesus with Moses. Many of the moments in the stories of Jesus have alignment with the stories of Moses. So for Jesus to be saying, I am, is not only recalling the early listeners back to the stories of Moses, but reminding them God is with them. Jesus ascended to a mountain to pray, just as Moses ascended to the mountain to receive the Ten Commandments. Jesus is the new Moses. More so than purely being man, Jesus is also God. The great I am, always with Moses, is now with the disciples. The great I am, Emmanuel, God with us. So do not be afraid, Jesus says, I am. But even upon hearing that, the disciples are also truly human, are they not? Because they aren't still convinced. Because Peter says, well, if it is really you, tell me to come and walk upon the waters with you. Now, we could be critical of Peter for his lack of faith in this moment. They've realized this is Jesus. He's come to them upon the water. He's walked upon the chaos and the raging seas. He's Lord above those things. The darkness isn't overpowering Jesus. But Peter still needs a little bit more of a confirmation. And what is interesting is that Jesus says, come, and that Peter actually does it. He actually steps out of the boat. Have you ever been to a roller skating rink where you can see that someone clearly does not want to skate and they're grasping onto that side railing as they, like a baby deer with their legs just, and they just don't want to let go of the rail because they're terrified of falling over? And I imagine that's a little bit really what Peter might be like, because stepping over the bow of the boat into the chaos of the waters, I'm sure he did have a pretty tight grip on that boat before he let go. But yet he was willing to release his grip and step out towards Jesus, take tentative steps upon the chaos of the water, just as Jesus did. And that is what Jesus calls his disciples to do the things that he does. And so in some ways, Peter is following the word of Jesus, that if Jesus does things, I can do them too in his name. Now, eventually, Peter succumbs to what's going on around him, though. You know, his eyes go to the right and to the left, and he realizes the situation he finds himself in, wind, rain, storms raging, and begins to doubt. And what I find beautiful, though, is the words that say, when he says, Lord, save me, that immediately Jesus reaches out his hand. There's no lecture about you should have believed more yet. It's immediate. Immediately Jesus reaches out his hand. When the danger was there, Peter cried out for help. Immediately Jesus reaches out his hand. And Jesus says to Peter, once they're back in the boat, well, you have a little faith. Why did you doubt? I mean, I can think of a few reasons why he doubted. But I also wonder whether this actually is not a criticism of Peter. Because throughout the biblical story, throughout the life of Jesus, even a little faith can do amazing things. Jesus tells the parable of the mustard seed, the smallest seed that grows into an enormous garden tree where the birds of the air can find their home, suggesting that even from the smallest things, even with a faith like a mustard seed, great and transforming things can happen for the kingdom of God. So little faith is actually of tremendous value. Little faith can do amazing, transformative things in people's lives. If Peter clung to the side of the boat, unable to let go, how much faith could he have? But little faith is what he had, and with a little faith, he stepped out upon those waters. Little faith meant still taking a huge step. And so if we pull our attention wider now, this passage today also tells us something about us as people and tells us something about God as well. Because for me, I know there are moments in my life where I only call out to God when I'm in trouble, when the storm is raging and I cry out, God, save me. And maybe you've found this too, that when life is challenging, we turn to God, we call out, and we seek his help and assistance. And I'm not totally sure why this is about myself, but I think in some ways I spend a lot of my time trying to secure my place in the world, feel safe and secure in what I'm doing, and safe and secure for the people I love. And there's nothing wrong with that on one level, because God, from the beginning, seeks that people find their place, find security, find meaning, find purpose. God desires that we flourish and grow. But the tension that we live in is that sometimes when we have success in our lives, we forget to connect in with the Creator of all things, and we forget and neglect God's work in our everyday lives in little ways. That we assume that things are on task, things are going well, and we forget. We forget to connect and engage with God. And so sometimes we get to a point where tragedy strikes, illness, job loss, and we turn to God in those hours of need. And our need for God becomes painfully clear. And this is the second part that this story tells us. That God is there to reach out immediately. That's what part of this passage says. In the chaos, God is ready to reach out immediately. That God responds. And no matter what it is that reminds us that we need God, God is there and willing to respond in love toward us. Jesus doesn't seek anything more from Peter than his cry for help. That's all he needed for Jesus to reach out and pull him from the waters. I sometimes wonder, would Jesus have reached out his hand if Peter had not said, "Lord, save me"? I mean, I'm sure Peter would not have hesitated uttering those words anyway. And so it tells us, firstly, that God is there to respond to us regardless of our circumstance, that God is always prepared and ready to be there. But secondly, and more so, God also calls us out somewhere. Remember, the story begins today with Jesus telling the disciples to go to the other side. Go take the boat to the other side. God is calling us to live lives of abundance and courage. That Jesus trusts the disciples to make it to the other side without him. That's how the journey begins. This encounter on the waves that Jesus and the disciples have is a reminder that while God is eager to respond to the needs that we have, God also invites us out into an adventure of faith as well. God invites us out to take steps of faith and courage. God calls us to stretch and grow and to live into an abundant life that God has promised for us, trusting Emmanuel, trusting that God is with us. And as Jesus walks upon the chaos and disorder to bring calm, peace, and relief, we too are called to walk. We too are called to step. And I don't know which steps you're being called to this day, but we are all called somewhere. We are called by the one who asks us just to have a little faith. With a little faith, much can be accomplished in the kingdom of God. The encouragement of Matthew 14 is that we do not walk our steps alone or without guidance. We walk with the Christ who is Lord of the chaos. We walk with the Christ who is Lord of the mountain. We walk through the Christ who reaches out to save no matter what, reminds us of our need for him. And we walk with the Christ who brings us out of chaos towards community, hospitality, welcome, and grace. What might your next step be this day?